Welcome to Golf Betting System podcast number 52. We are covering the 2018 DP World Tour Championship on the European Tour and the RSM Classic on the PGA Tour. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. I'm Steve Bamford, PGA Tour previewer at Golf Betting System, and with me for the last time in 2018, we have European Tour expert Paul Williams and podcast pundit Barry O'Hanrahan. Good evening, chaps.
Evening, guys.
Good evening, guys.
It's been a bit of a slog, hasn't it, the last 9 months or so?
Yeah.
We've made it to the end. There's light at the end of the tunnel, chaps.
Golfbettingsystem.co.uk, Twitter handles. I'm at Bamford Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting. Barry is at A Good Talk Golf. We're available on our multiple channels. Podbean, iTunes, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher. You name it, we're on it. We've also got the Golf Betting System YouTube channel. I know you find us via various different channels. Naturally, subscribe and follow the podcast. Now, if you could take some time to rate and review us, that would be fantastic on iTunes. Now, I've got a couple of reviews from last week, chaps, so I'll read them out as I do. First one, and this is from Mick O'Shanker, and he's in Ireland. This was via Apple. 5 stars, enjoyable listen. Look forward to the podcast every week. Great knowledge on the tours. Is this your dad, Baron? Great knowledge on the tours and in-depth study into picks each week to avoid. I added that, by the way. And not just for the obvious favourites. So thank you for that, Mick. And also another review here. Again, 5 stars. A great listen for any golf better. Love hearing people talk golf and especially betting. More than that, these guys do a lot of my work for me and provide some stats that I don't have. I disagree with the weight the guys seem to give the two previous winners' odds and incoming form for the most part. But hey, if I did agree with everything, ... That's from Sebastian Sidnall in the UK, again via Apple Podcasts. As I always say, if you leave us a good rating and of course give us some commentary, I will read them out at the start of each and every Golf Betting System podcast. We're off then, chaps, aren't we? This is our last show of 2018,
out with a bang, hopefully.
We got do we want to talk about last week? I was throwing the phone at the wall at something yesterday evening, but when Aaron Wise started doubling everything.
Yeah, well, Scott Pearson came through and
I can't complain.
Something at the end, didn't he?
I can't complain too much. I think Pearson shot, and was it 62 or something crazy?
Yeah, under, yeah.
He's a funny bugger, Pearson. That's two tournaments on the trot now. Just shoots a crazy low number in the final round.
That's the McIlroy special, isn't it? The backdoor top five.
Be even nice if he did it when you're on him and he was already close to the lead.
That would help.
That'd be the trick, wouldn't it?
Well, that was it. Friday, 4 under, he went through the back nine first. Yeah, 4 under, you think, this is fantastic. Now he's got like that stretch, 2 through 8. He is going to fill his boots here. Shoots one over those birdie festival holes. And you're shaking your head going, my God, you were 4 under and you played the hardest holes. And then you shoot one over on the stretch where you need to be shooting 3 and 4 under.
And frustrating, Steve.
Too far off the lead, isn't it? Two cracking tournaments this week. Well, not two in total. That's absolute rubbish, actually. There's one cracking tournament and there's one...
End of season piss up on the PGA Tour, isn't it?
in Georgia. Yes, that'll be the one. Of course, let's crack on with the DP World Tour Championship, Paul. You crack on because it's clearly the big tournament this week, and it's a cracking field.
Yeah, it is. So, as you'd expect, I guess, as it's the pinnacle of the European Tour season. So, you know, you've been going for 11 months now, haven't we? Back to the back end of November. In fact, very nearly a year. In fact, they just virtually wrap it round the full 12 months, don't they, in the European Tour. There's not much of a... We breathe a full stop. But finally made it to the Earth Course in Dubai. And you've got the top 60 available here in the rankings who are going to tee on Thursday. I say the top 60 available because some players, even though they're qualified, have chosen not to play for varying reasons. The most notable of which is Justin Rose. We've got
any reason why?
I asked a question on Twitter and I've got a few very useful responses back, but I couldn't see anything definitive. One of the guys said that he'd said in Turkey that was going to be the end of his European tour season, come what may. Whether he won in Turkey or not, he wasn't going to play Nedbank, he wasn't going to play Dubai, regardless of where that left him.
Not because when you book a club fitting with Hanma, they just don't let you change the appointment?
Strange, isn't it? There's been a bit...
He's played a lot of golf in his defence.
He has played a lot of golf.
Yeah.
I thought...
At the highest level.
In my mind, the reason he'd missed Nedbank last week was so that he'd be fresh for Dubai. To miss both of them sends a message, in my view. I think the European Tour could do something about it. They've got to do something to make this last three events, make them attractive enough so that players that are in position want to come over and play. Clearly, Rose isn't here. Julian Suhr is not here. Casey and Kuchar. You can understand Kuchar. I'm assuming Suhr's got an injury because he pulled out back end of last week, didn't he? He was supposed to be playing in Nedbank and he didn't play in the end. But it's not just that. It's the two events before where we've had a lot of players in the top 10, top 15 of the rankings at that point in time just haven't bothered. So clearly there's something not quite right, and I think they need to sit down and reassess where they're going with this final Rolex series, what used to be the final series and now is just the Rolex series, and how it kind of manifests itself into this final event. But yeah, I'll stop moaning about it because we are where we are, and there are we have got the most of the top 60 here, and it is a very strong field, as you say. You've got McIlroy heading the field at 10-1, Sergio at 11s, Fleetwood and Rahm at 14, Xander, Till Hatton at 16, 21 bar after that. So you've got a lot of players who are, decent quality players, household names who are at the top of the betting, and it should be a decent enough event. From a race to Dubai perspective, it's probably going to be a bit of a damp squib because Molinari is well over £1 million ahead. Only Fleetwood can catch him. And that will take some monumental shift for both of those guys for it to actually end up being Fleetwood's title. So that's likely to be secondary, I guess, unless Molinari has an absolute stinker in the first day and it opens up some permutations. But I suspect the whole emphasis will really just be on the actual event itself, which is no bad thing. It's a cracking event. It's a cracking course. We've seen it for the last few years. One I really enjoy, actually. Going back a few years, I've had a few results here over the years, which is nice. Kind of gives you a bit of confidence going into these events that you've got the right angle of attack for this kind of event.
What's the key that we're looking for then, Paul? What are the key skill stats that the winners here share?
Well, it's a long course. I mean, we've all seen it on TV. 7,675 yards. So you need a bit of power. It's pretty wide. It's a desert course. It tends to be played firm and fast. They have overseeded the rough with rye, so it tends to be a little bit tougher off the tee now if you miss fairways, but it's still relatively wide. It still reaps a decent score, and Stenson got to 25 under, so you need to make birdies. Big old Bermuda greens, so you need to be able to putt on Bermuda greens as well. I think for me, if you look at how the likes of Stenson, McIlroy have got the job done here in the past, it's tended to be with a very strong tee to green game. They're generally longer players. We know with Stenson that he tends to forego a bit of his length just with his three wood so that he can hit more fairways, which is fine. If you're hitting fairways here, you're hitting greens, you could putt 1.65, 1.7, and you can win with the requisite amount of birdies here. Minimise bogeys, maximise birdies. It's a relatively straightforward combination, I think. And if you look at the players who've won here, they've tended to come in decent form. Each one of them, going back to 2009, had a top 10 in their previous six starts. But then again, you kind of expect that from a field that's been whittled down to the final 60 players, or the top 60 players available. Form coming in terms of course form, I mean, Westwood and Coulson were both playing it for the first time, but the event had only just started there. John Ryan last year was playing for the first time, but all the other guys who won here had at least a top 10 in Dubai to their name at some point in the past. And if you look at corresponding course form, you know, there's a lot of these players have got form in the Gulf, a lot of players who've played in the Middle East swing and done well, so form in Qatar, form in Dubai, form in Abu Dhabi, all of that's good. It's all good pointers to who may well go well on this particular track. I don't think you need to overanalyze this one. I think if you can find a player who's playing well, hitting greens, has got some decent form in the Gulf or in the Middle East in the past, then you know, you can kind of whittle down to a shortlist fairly readily. Any other thoughts on the track before I tell you what my angle of attack is, guys?
Dead air. Go for it.
Well, I've published my preview earlier today. Let's get it out nice and early. I guess a lot of the prices will start to drift. And looking at the top of the market, you've got McIlroy and we've got Sergio there, and they're both, you know, they're going to be virtually joint favourites. I wouldn't be surprised if Sergio, he has been backed in already today, he's going to be close to being favourite. For me, I mean, looking at McIlroy, watching him recently, his driver still doesn't seem to be firing on all cylinders to me. And I think he's going to need to drive it well this week to really get himself into contention. And if his key asset, his key skill isn't firing, then I struggle, you know, even though he's won this twice, you know, and clearly loves the track, I really struggle to really get excited about him. Sergio should have won again last week, shouldn't he? You know, he had a great chance. Mm. Will that knock any stuffing out of him? I don't know. You know, he's come back from the Ryder Cup in a far more positive frame of mind, far more confident. But these results, these knocks that the professional players have, can impact their confidence, can't they? So, difficult one there. From Molinari, for me, I think he'll just coast through and win the race to Dubai. I can't, you know, his form and his kind of mental focus since the Ryder Cup, well, in fact, since the Open Championship, has been there. You know, it's been challenging, and the Ryder Cup really clearly just kind of finished that off for him, I think. Tommy Fleetwood, he's going to have to go and win this tournament and hope that Molinari has an absolute stinker. So, you know, where's his focus going to be? We saw last year with Fleetwood when he was kind of defending that the position he was in with the race to Dubai. And he, you know, I forget where he finished. It was kind of mid-20s, I think. It, you know, kind of scraped over the line in the end, didn't he?
He was never really involved.
No, not with the actual event itself. And it was only, you know, I was on Rose last year, and you know, Rose should have won that tournament. But then, as he started to fall away, it kind of fell back into Fleetwood's hands. But I can't, you know, I think there's a lot of things for these guys to be thinking about. And the guy that I've backed, and I've backed two from close to the top of the market, the first guy I've backed is John Rahm, who is defending this week. He won last year on debut and clearly took to the course very nicely indeed. And I think the pressure's completely off with him. I think he'll turn up here. He's got, you know, there's no external pressure on him whatsoever. You know, the most pressurised element of him coming this week is going to be the fact that he's defending. But you know, a lot of the focus is going to be elsewhere, in my view. You know, they'll be talking to Molinari, they'll be talking to Fleetwood, they'll be, you know, that'll be where the focus, pre-event media focus will be, I think. And I think John Ryan will kind of get away with that scot-free this time round. Not that I don't think he can handle it, because I'm sure he can. I think he's just, you know, he's still a relatively young guy getting used to the intricacies of defending tournaments and contending for tournaments, you know, year after year. And I think I couldn't see any reason why he wouldn't go well, to be honest. You know, he's got to be continued to be positive from the back end of that the Ryder Cup, where he obviously beat Woods in that in the singles event and in the singles on the Sunday. You know, his positive approach off the back of that, you know, positivity in terms of his own mind has got to be strong. I backed him at the HSBC and he didn't really do much that week, did he? He started off slowly and eventually came back on the weekend to finish in the 22nd, something like that. So it was okay, but it wasn't anything special. But I think he'll come back now after another couple of weeks off, and I think there's a good case for him to come back and defend his title. I mean, you look at the two that he's defended so far. He was 29th at the Farmers Insurance Open earlier this year, but he was second going into the weekend. He had won the week before at the Career Builder, so you know, I think you can forgive him the fact that he finished 29th there. He was fourth when defending the Irish Open earlier this year, and again he started slowly that week and came through. So you know, I think he's getting more used to and more capable in that kind of situation, and I think it's only a matter of time really. He's going to have a lot of titles to defend over his career, and I think he'll get his head around it really quite quickly. And in terms of his game,
if you look at that HSBC Champions event, as you were saying, over the weekend, Schauffele 137, yeah, shots total, won the tournament. Yeah. Then we had Putnam and old Thorbjørn at 139 with Hao Tong Lee. Well, we know what Olsen and Lee have gone on to do, yeah? They've been very competitive. And then Brooks Koepka and John Rahm, 140 strokes. And I don't know if Barry agrees, I don't think that the conditions were set up. That's not Rahm's game, is it? When that was quite a technical scoring event. And as I've noted in the past, when I've tipped him up at stupid things like the US Open, that's not his game at all. But if you're looking at a mid-teen to upper teens kind of winning target, that's more John Rahm.
I think he likes it when there's a score to be made. Yeah, absolutely. What did he win at the Irish Open? It was 24, 25 under. It was something really deep, wasn't it? Mm. This is much more his game. I mean, what stood out to me with Rahm was when he finished, I think it was seventh at the Tour Championship at Eastlake, something like that. And he was right in the mix going into the Sunday at least. And again, that's really not his game for me. His game is far more geared to these lower scoring, you know, easier, if you can call them easier, tests that appeal to him.
He's won the Bob Hope Classic as well. So yeah, that says everything,
yeah,
doesn't
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. So yeah, I like Rahm at the top of the market. And the other one I had to back, and I was hoping for a longer price, but again, when Rose pulled out, it's always going to impact prices at the top end of the market. It's Hao Tong Lee, who's been playing some outstanding golf, absolutely outstanding golf for the last few months, really. So he's fifth at the Dunhill Links, ninth at Walton Heath, 11th at Shashan, second in Turkey. Only should have won in Turkey, shouldn't he? That playoff, eventual playoff against Justin Rose, and Rose did everything to kind of throw it away, but Lee just couldn't quite do the business. Fifth at the Ned Bank last week, and he was in a nice kind of quiet spot going into Sunday, which is exactly where I wanted him, because I think if he'd have finished mid division, we might have got 33 something like about him this week. But no, he went out and shot 65 in the final round and shot up to the fifth place. So clearly he showed some nice form, but equally it's battened his price down. But I think he's that close to a win. I do think he's that close to a win that he's got to be backed. He's long enough, he hits lots of greens, he's putting well, the game's completely there. 30th and 13th here from his two attempts. And crucially won the Dubai Desert Classic earlier this year as well, which again is another one that's pops up a lot on the previous winners' lists, you know, of their previous wins or contending events over the years.
That result jumps out.
Yeah,
doesn't it?
Exactly. It's a lot of people picked up on that for Augusta, didn't they? To you know, potentially have him down as a long shot to do well at Augusta. And whilst that didn't quite pan out, I think you've got to consider that form. You've got to consider any form, really, in the Middle East for when it comes to this event. But that in particular, a win at the Emirates is a big pointer of potential success here at the Earth course. So those two...
It's funny how some of these internationals are starting to jump out now, and now that it's President's Cup qualifying. Yeah. Leishman's won. Hao Tong Lee's on fire. Danny Lee last week.
Yeah, he came close, Danny Lee, didn't he?
Yeah.
In fact...
Emiliano Grillo.
Yeah. He's just generally playing very, very well, Lee. And, hopefully he's got one more week left in him. And I can see, you know, those two, I can see Rahm and Lee really pushing it towards the end. I couldn't quite decide which way to play it, so I've gone each way with both of them in the end. But I can easily see both of those guys coming and placing in the top five, top six playing positions for this week. So fingers crossed for those guys. And those are the two at the top. A bit further down the list, I've gone Jordan Smith, 100-1. He's another one of these players who can put the ball out there. He's a 300-yard driver easily. And difference with Jordan to a lot of these longer drivers is he's pretty accurate as well. And he's been top 10 for accuracy over his last three starts. I guess if they did a total driving stat for the European Tour, he would be right up there, because that's generally his game. He's long and he's straight. But then if you look at his putting performances over his last five starts, he's been top eight for putting in three of those five starts. And that's not him. That's not Jordan Smith. His game is purely about his long game. So when he's putting well, you need to sit up and take note of it, I think. Digging back through his history... He won twice in the Middle East. Well, one of them was Egypt, one of them was in Dubai on the Challenge Tour early in his career. 18 under, 20 under, those two results. So clearly has got on with this part of the world before. And he finished 25th here last year, open with a 75. But if you remember back, he was struggling with glandular fever at the time. And he'd pulled out of the Ned Bank the week before. He really was poorly. Decided to have a go at this, started with 75 and persisted with it and finished 25th in the end. So I think he did particularly well, seeing he was struggling with his health at the time. And he comes this year in far better form, you know, in far better health as well. Another year's worth of history under his belt. I think he'll go well this week, Jordan Smith. And clearly playing well, striking the ball well, and putting well as well. So that's a nice little potent combination for this week, I think. And the final one I've backed today is Dean Burmester, the South African, who was fourth last year. And I was surprised to get 125-1 with Dean. I think he'll be backed in quite heavily from that, because to have finished fourth last year, he was 11th last week at the at the Ned Bank, which for him was a big personal best. He'd played the Ned Bank, or he'd played at Sun City rather, four times in the past. He finished no better than 44th or 42nd, something like that. So 11th last week is a big positive for him. And he's quite capable. I know this is a step up. I know if he was to win this, it would be a big step up in terms of his career. His biggest win so far is the Suwannee Open. He won six other Sunshine Tour events over the course of his career so far. But I think he's one of those players. He's got the game, he's long, he can putt well. When he's finding greens, as he is at the moment, I think he's dangerous. In fact, he should have won this, could have quite easily won this last year. He was right in position and then won over for the final four holes. And he was right, you know, a couple of birdies there instead of a bogey, he wins the tournament. It's that tight, so... I think he'll go well. 7th in Abu Dhabi last year, 22nd in Dubai this year, 4 rounds in the 60s. And shown a nice little bit of form recently, 65 in Turkey, which stood out. And then, as I said, 11th last week at Sun City, which is also bodes well. Hitting lots of greens at the moment, Dean. So 125 and 100 for Jordan Smith, and then a couple of guys at the top end of the market as well. So... a bit of balance to my staking plan this week, and see how that takes us for the final week of the year. You guys fancy anyone seen so far?
What do you think, Barry?
Yeah, the Burmester shout's good. He could do with a little practicing on the putting green, though.
He can putt well. He's a funny one.
He wasn't great last week.
No. Again, to finish 11th and not be putting. Yeah. If you look at his putting performance here last year, he was top 10. I think he was 9th for putting. So switching over to these Bermuda greens may be a positive for him as well.
Could be. And those are tricky enough greens at the Gary Player course. Mm. Like, you know, if you're. So you can definitely forgive him that when he's hitting the ball 345 off the tee and he was top 10 for greens and regulations. So, yeah, it's a really good price. I'm going to stick with a couple of my long shots from last week. Neither of them totally disappointed. They both had a decent chance of getting places and ultimately just fell short. But Mike Lorenzo Vera.
Yeah.
Had a good week, you know. He was 25th in accuracy off the tee, 20th in driving distance, 14th in greens, around the top 30 in putts. So, you know, that's very solid all the way around.
Mm.
And where is he? He's got a decent enough result here before. He's 13th here last year. So, you know, that's. I was able to pick him up at 150-1.
Yeah,
which means he's actually longer this week than he was last week. So yeah, thanks very much. I'll have a go at that.
He's always underrated, isn't he, Vera? He's always one of the ones that is much further down the list. But I thought he was going to place for you at one point, Barry. I thought he was in position, wasn't he, going into Sunday?
He was indeed. Yeah, just didn't happen. You know, as seems quite common these days for my bets. But you know, we continue on. The other one, I'm going to stick with Darren Fickart. The pronunciation. Absolutely on fire with the putter, and I think he was paddy last in the field for greens and regulation, despite being sixth in accuracy off the tee.
Did I say 50% of greens? Is that right?
50% in greens, yeah. So that's absolutely appalling. So hopefully he can get to the range and just figure out what the hell's wrong with the irons in advance of the tournament this week. He isn't that long off the tee, but you know, if the course is playing firm and fast, that can help him out a little bit. And if that putter stays hot, that can obviously balance the books a little bit for the lack of distance. So listen, I got him at 200-1, six places. That's market best for places and price. So that's with Boyle Sports. So I can't really complain about that. Having a look at other guys across the field, I like Thomas Detry.
Yeah, he's playing
brilliantly. Whether he steps up.
Well, last week.
Yeah, yeah. Like everything across the board, the stats are really solid, playing well the last 2 weeks. I think the only negative is this is his first time here.
Yeah, although, as I say, three of the winners here have won on debut, so I wouldn't get overly hung up on it. I think positive course for him is positive, but you know, certainly not an absolute prerequisite. Certainly not if you're looking for a longer shot.
Just looking at Fratelli and Burmester last year, both fourth, both on course debut. I think if your game fits and you're in good nick, it fits.
Based on the last 2 weeks, he's playing some superb golf. So I'll flip coins, you know, agonize over it. Probably won't back it, and then he'll go and win. So, I might have to. Yeah, usually I have to put a bet on, but you know that kind of angle didn't work for me so well last week on a couple of bets. So I think the less I say, the safer my money is.
Very good. Now I can see. I think, as you say, Vera last week, he at one point I thought he was going to get right into that spot for you, and he's in fact both your guys when I'd have flicked through the leaderboard early on Sunday, and they were both in that kind of 6th, 7th position, weren't they? So
yeah, they're sitting nicely, ready to pounce and just grab that place. I mean, the tournament win was obviously gone at that stage from them, but yeah, look, a little bit disappointing, but rather than put them in the bin, I decided one last roll of the dice and stick with them.
Give them another chance. Why not?
Yeah, for redemption.
anything,
save the season.
Yeah, absolutely. Anything from you, Steve? Are you going to move on to the RSM?
I think we'll move on to the RSM. I do like Dittry, I must say. He's a very well-regarded player, isn't he?
Yeah, he's got a win in him. He's got a win in him. Mm. And Thomas Peters...
I don't know if he wins, but he's certainly the kind of player that can... He's clearly not scared of mixing it with the big names, you know. the last two sets, you know, they've been reasonable, you know, reasonable to strong fields the last 2 weeks, third and seventh.
Yeah, his compatriot Thomas Peters is another one that, you know, I had a really good look at him, and he's been throwing in some really silly low rounds every now and again, but then he's been throwing in some really silly big rounds in there as well, which I don't think you can do that here. I think you've got to be consistent, and, you know, I think, you know, four rounds of 66 is far more likely to get the job done than, you know, alternating 72s with 62s and trying to make it work that way. But
I know he's done well at somewhere like Dubai, it's Abu Dhabi, isn't it? Yeah. But I always think Peters is far more comfortable on bent grass or bent Poana grass than he is on Bermuda.
Yeah, although, as I say, he's got a decent record in the Middle East. There's a few of them like that. You know, he's got a decent record. Olsen's got a decent record in the Middle East. George Coates, he's got a decent record in the Middle East. You know, there's a few of them that you could look into their form in that respect and pick them out. If you can trust them to get round and produce four rounds that you know are going to be good enough to put you in the contention for the for Sunday.
What put you off your old mate Matt Wallace?
There's not enough form there in the Middle East to really make it count, in my view. I mean, I think, you know, these players need to have a bit of experience, or they need to show me something that's triggering a few, you know, a few lights to make me think they're going to go well. I think he can compete anywhere, but I don't know. It just didn't quite fit for me. Probably go and win now. Mm. He did. What was interesting last week?
I tell you I guarantee the player that goes well this week will be Danny Buddy Willett.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone's given up on him, and his price has more than doubled, isn't it? And then it was a really lopsided event for him, wasn't it? You know, I think it was his back nine performance was absolutely abysmal, and then his front nine performance was, you know, the complete polar opposite, at least for the first couple of days. It was a really odd one from him, really odd. But yeah, there's been some decent underlying form of Willett, and, you know, wouldn't be surprised to see him have another decent week over, you know, at some point in the near future.
All that expectation off his shoulders probably goes well. Two tournaments to discuss, or not discuss, but just highlight to listeners before we actually move on to the RSM Classic. There's two very good tournaments. The Emirates Australian Open this week is absolutely loaded. They're clearly throwing some appearance money at it. Keegan Bradley is the favourite. Kuchar, Cameron Smith, Branch Snedeker, Abraham Anser, Benny Ann, Lahiri, Davis defends. Nicholas Coulthart is playing. Brendan Steele. That's a decent field down there. I suppose all the money that they threw at Jordan Spieth over the last few years, now that he's not bothering to go down there this year for his wedding, they've spread it about a bit. But that's a decent field for the Australians.
They can divvy that few million up between 10 players and attract a few names over.
Absolutely. But yeah, that one's taken the eye. And there's also, of course, the Dunlop Phoenix, which they play each and every year over in Japan. We've got Brooks Koepka at 2-1. Hideki Matsuyama, who really is seriously out of form, isn't he? He played that Teo Masters. That's the one that he played that last week. That's the tournament he's won three times in Japan. And I didn't even see his name on the top 25, 30 in the leaderboard. All over the place. Griot's going out there if you fancy a bit of 8-1 action on double bogey coming down the stretch, Emiliano Griot. The name that jumps out to me, top five of the HSBC champions a few weeks ago, Andrew Putnam at 28-1 in that tournament.
Yeah, I know you were keen on him for the following week, and he pulled out, didn't he?
And he withdrew, didn't he? But if you're, as we said earlier, if you're good enough to be finishing fifth in a WGC at a very tough Shazan, I'm not really seeing why you're at 28-1 in this Dunlop Phoenix when you've got the likes of Sean Norris at 12-1 and Emiliano Griot at 8-1. That doesn't make a lot of sense.
46th is where Matsuyama finished again in the end of that Teo Masters. Not ideal.
Yeah. There's talk of stress, and there's clearly been weight loss, and if you're looking at two high-class performers this year who've had a really bad season, Jordan Spieth, number one, and Hideki Matsuyama has to be number two, doesn't it? They've really struggled. I just thought Andrew Putnam at 28-1 is a decent price in an event like that.
He got married relatively recently, Hideki, didn't he? Perhaps that's the cause of his weight loss and his stress.
What, and then you've got Jordan getting married in the next couple of weeks as well? I'm sure there's nothing at all to do with any of that, Paul.
No.
These players, they're just machines, aren't they? Right, RSM Classic, played on Sea Island, which is a golfing commune on the Georgia coastline. Played across two tracks, just to complicate matters. It always used to be played on just the one par 70 course, the seaside course on St. Simon's Island. But then they wanted to up the amount of players that can play in this because, you know, you're getting a lot of web.com graduates that are struggling to get starts. So it's now a 156 player field. And they split it one round out of the first two at the host seaside course. And then the other round is on the course next door, the plantation course. And when I say it's a 7,000-yard par 72, that's all you need to know, really. It's the kind of course you can take apart. Both feature TIFF Dwarf Bermuda grass greens. And as per any kind of seaside test, I mean, last week we saw at Mayakoba, it was pretty dry. It was typically warm temperatures and there wasn't a lot of wind about. And Kuchar took it apart. You actually go back to Kuchar. It's another one that's kind of bangs you over the back of the head, isn't it? I think he was 55-1 to win it. I mean, who'd have thought a 55-1 win from Kuchar? What price was Westwood?
40s.
Jeez.
Yeah, 41. Decent double.
It was the can't win, won't win, will win weekend, wasn't it? It was just completely off.
But it was up with Kuchar, wasn't it? Because he went out there without a caddy and he was sniffing around trying to find a caddy of any description, wasn't he? And then eventually got this local guy, David El Toucan, his name, or his nickname.
Right.
And
he shook on 2.5%, did he?
Well, let's assume he's on at least 5, but most of them are on 10, aren't they? And Kuchar's just won $1.3 million. You'd like to think he gives the guy a decent check at the back end of it. He's a nice bloke, Matt. You'd think you'd give him the full 10, wouldn't you?
Came across very well in the winners' interview afterwards in front of the press. He's a very nice chap, Kuchar, and he was just saying what a terrible season he's had, and the relief to win that. But as he said, it took him by surprise. He hit a ton of greens at the Shriners, and then he turns up knowing that he can hit the ball on the green, and all of a sudden the putter starts working. And he said, normally I build up with a couple of top tens, a top five, and then I win. And by that time, we know that the bookmakers have cut him down to about 8-1, haven't they? Yeah. But for Matt Kuchar to win at 55-1 with no incoming form whatsoever was a bit of a shocker. But you could see why he fat. You know, he was perfect for the task, you know, looking at it on a overall perspective, not on a recency bias perspective, because clearly he was second at the Open Championship the year before last, wasn't he? He plays well by the coast, he's won at Harbour Town, blah, 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 blah. But he just didn't have that incoming form that we all
look
for. It
wasn't a typical Matt Kuchar win of any description. And I know, you know, rules can be broken and clearly trends can be broken, but that was an odd one. You know, and as you say, he kind of admitted it himself. That's not the way that he tends to roll. So, well done to him.
This RSM Classic, if I just take you through the past winners recently. Austin Cook last year, 21-under. Mackenzie Hughes at 17-under. Both, of course, web.com graduates. Both of whom, interestingly, hadn't had a top 10 finish on the PGA Tour in the season that they actually won. I was on Kevin Kisner in 2015 when he won at 22-under. Now, Kisner, believe it or not, to win that was at 22-1. Now, I'm looking at some of the markets so far that are up, and there aren't many. So this might change, but I'm seeing the likes of JJ Spawn at 22 to 1 to win this week. And you think, well, 2 years ago, Kevin Kisner, who'd just come off a second place at the HSBC Champions, won at 22 to 1. So I don't know if there's a lot of value in 22 to 1 on JJ. CT Pan, you know me, I do like CT Pan, but I'm struggling at 25 to 1 on CT Pan.
He's
short. That is very short. Chess and Hadley, 25 to 1. Che Reavy, he's just withdrawn, so just bear that in mind. But yes, it's per usual. It's a link style course. If the wind is a factor, it's still kind of scorable. You know, that year that Hughes won 17 under, that was quite a windy year. Kisner won at 22 under. It was blowing 25, 30 mile an hour a couple of rounds. But the thing that's really noticeable in the forecast this week are the conditions. The first 2 days are pretty naughty, got to be said. Thursday looks like it's going to be gusting up to 20 miles an hour, and it's about 15 degrees Celsius. So, you know, that's feeling pretty kind of
chilly.
Northern European, isn't it? And then the wind subsides on the Friday. But up until around about late morning, it's 10 degrees Celsius. And a lot of the home contingent are not going to like that one little bit. And then it's your typical grind it out Thursday and Friday. And then Saturday and Sunday, it warms up. The wind disappears. And it's going to be a real birdie fest. But one thing I have noticed here, if you look at previous winners, Austin Cook was 8th after the first round. Mackenzie Hughes was 1st. Kevin Kisner was 4th. Chris Kirk was 11th. Most of the winners here have started quickly. There was one exception. Our old friend Robert Streb, who clearly played in like an absolute jerk last week. He was 48. I think he'd got on the Sherberts after that top 5 finish in Las Vegas. Maybe he didn't actually leave Las Vegas until like the Wednesday, and then he flew up on the Thursday morning down to Marco. But
doesn't it like his focus he, was quite he was there, does
I don't think so. But he's the kind of sort that'll then all of a sudden he'll win this week. 48th he was after round 1, and then 10th after round 2. It would appear to me you need a fast start, put it that way. If you're looking for form in, Austin Cook, 50th at Mayakoba, 20th at Shriners, 25th at Sanderson Farms. Mackenzie Hughes was way out there. Missed cut in Mayakoba, 68th in Las Vegas, 26th at the Sanderson Farms. He had a 13th at the Safeway Open, which had been his first PGA Tour event after his promotion from the Web.com Tour. So there's something in that. But he was pretty left field. Kevin Kisner, who is lives in Georgia, doesn't live on Sea Island, though. Doesn't live on St. Simon's Island either. He travelled down and won this after finishing second at the WGC HSBC Champions. That was also the year, if you remember, when he finished second at the Players. He finished second at a number of tournaments and kept getting beaten in playoffs. Robert Streb, 10th at the Shriners, 31st at the Friars, 9th at TPC Boston. So there's a kind of mix of form in and what we're looking for. One thing I have noted in the preview, the golf course next door hosts the Jones Cup every year for talented amateurs. So I've listed players that have done well at the Jones Cup. The likes of Luke List, Brian Harman, who's done well at this, Bud Cawley, they do appear in that list. So, you know, that those are players that have played well on Sea Island in their amateur days. One name that does jump out there is Corey Connors. He won the Jones Cup in 2014. So that might be one, because we know it. And he was also 14th in that when he defended the Jones Cup in 2015. And we know that he was he runner-up at the Sanderson Farms a few weeks ago? That might be one that to look
150
at.
150-1.
And they also play... Sorry,
150
what?
150-1 is Corey Connors.
I know. way overpriced, isn't he? He doesn't get taken seriously, Connors. I know you had a run on him, didn't you, earlier in the year? Was it... didn't he play well at, like, Colonial, and he did well at that Corrales tournament down in Dominican Republic? And then he kept getting into really good positions. And I thought that was it. You tipped him up that week for that Corrales, and I think he was, like, in the last group, and he ended up finished, like, 20-something because he collapsed in the final round.
He looks... You know, looking at his results, he is that kind of erratic player, isn't he? But as you say, you know, second at the Sanderson Farms, and... Mate, his all-round game was fantastic that week. Really was. And if you could ignore the missed cuts, and that's why you get an 150-1 on him, but if there's some other corresponding form that's been buried a bit further down, then that could be a bit of a coup, that one. I like that.
He was third that week for strokes gained tee to green. And if you look at this test, if you look at the strokes gained numbers, which is a new addition to the preview. These are the average over the last three winners. Strokes gained off the tee, 22nd. Strokes gained approach, 23rd. Strokes gained around the green, 18th. I do think you need a scrambling game around it. Strokes gained tee to green, 9th. And strokes gained putting, 7th. But as per always, well, not always, but this seems to be... Kevin Kisner won us in 15. He was strokes gained tee to green, 2nd. And Austin Cook won it last year, strokes gained tee to green first. And of course, Mackenzie Hughes wins it in 2016. Strokes gained tee to green was only 25th. He basically won it around the green. He was, I think he scrambled at like 92%, something incredible. Yes. So he was like some kind of miracle worker around the green.
Weeks, yeah.
And stroke gained putting third. So you can kind of win it both ways if you've got a really, really razor-sharp short game.
Generally,
to actually be able to predict who's going to do that is not easy, is it? Not easy at all. They also play the Southeastern Conference University Championships here each and every year on this particular host course, the par 70 course, at the actual seaside course. I've also listed the individual players that have done well in that since 2010. The likes of Russell Henley, who's won that. Bud Cawley appears in there. Hudson Swafford, Harris English. Your old friend Dominic Bazzelli appears twice in those particular numbers. Who the hell is Brian? It's been a long year.
Yeah,
and also last year, I'll just talk over it, Barry. Don't worry. Last year, 2017, Cameron Champ was 5th in the individual results, and then Sam Burns was 9th. Right, I've gone for two so far, who I've actually backed. One is Jim Furyk, who I think at 50-1 is a decent kind of fit for this. Clearly played well last week. And if you want someone that's going to hit tons and tons of fairways, tons and tons of greens, and has got a record on all the kind of courses you want to see, and who we know goes well on Bermuda, I think 50-1 about Jim Furyk is a good price. It kind of took me by surprise, you know, with Jimbo. He's finished here, 3 attempts, 11th in 2010, 3rd in 2013, 6th in 2016, and in 3 of his last starts, he finished 6th last week and 4th at the Wyndham Championship. That's not bad, is it?
That's a nice little combination, isn't it? Clearly the bookies aren't rating him in that same respect, are they, for him to be out at 50s?
50-1, 55-1 if you want to take the 5 places with Bet365. Hopefully we might get an outlier like a Betfred or someone like that that goes a little bit bigger than 50s and gives you a couple of extra places. But I just think he's playing some really good... I mean, those numbers took me by surprise, it has to be said. And we're seeing 55-1 with Bet365, and I'm seeing him as short as 30-1 with others.
Like that.
I'm not saying Jim wins, but I'm saying if you want to cover your arse this week and you want someone that's going to get in the mix and has got an each-way chance, I don't think 50-1 about Jim Furyk is a bad price when I'm seeing the likes of JJ Spawn at 22-1.
No, I can say that.
All the lads over 40 will be well pumped as well about their chances of winning. You know, they see
won't they?
Well, they see it done on two tours the week before. You know, all of a sudden they go, actually, do you know what? Maybe I'm not done and dusted. Maybe I can win on the main tour.
Don't forget, Barry, 2016, yeah, Jim Furyk was second at the US Open. He's still very competitive
on the right
he?
Kind of track. Yeah, I mean, Furyk and US Open are, you know, they're well suited, aren't they? But his record here, as you just highlighted, is he's particularly strong, isn't it?
I think Nash, the bookmakers, thinking he's kind of semi-retired and can't be bothered. But you look at 2016 when he was I did make a note of his age. I think he's 46 or something like that.
Yeah, he's in that bracket.
2016. Second at the US Open. He also finished fifth at the Travelers and sixth here at the RSM Classic. So he's still very, very competitive. And I think that was also the year it was. He finished fifth at the Travelers when he shot that incredible 58. Mm. Putter was a lot warmer last week. He said that he's got no expectations on himself whatsoever. He's just kind of finding out where his game at, and he's really positively surprised by how well he's playing. He finished the Wyndham Championship with a 63 back in August. That was the week Schnedeker won for us. And he finished last week 65, 66, 67 to finish sixth. That doesn't shout 55 to 1 to me. Got to be
said. Well, no. First for driving accuracy, second for greens regulation on the week as well.
Yep.
Something
and as we know with Jim, you know, you can throw a hooly at him, he'll grind it out, won't he? He'll hang around. So I can see him going well this week. Barry, let's bring you in. I know that you've got a couple of fancies in this. And then I'll mention the second guy that I've backed.
Yeah, kind of. I'm trying to get the sneaky one. And I remember you mentioning his name a couple of weeks ago, saying you just wanted to see any sort of form from him whatsoever after he had a third place. And, well, he's done the right thing for Steve, I think, because it's made his price much more attractive. He's gone and put in back-to-back missed cuts. So it's kind of perfect lead-in form for just the off-the-radar win. The thing I like is that from reading, getting a little sneak look at your preview earlier, was the talk about the local form and the SEC and the Jones Cup results. And last year he was 8th in the Jones Cup and, as you mentioned earlier, 9th in the SEC, which is, that's the one on this course, isn't it? I'm going to go with that and forget the form of the last 2 weeks, because he's clearly, something's right with the game when finishing third only 3 weeks ago, and maybe it's just a case of matching up the course and somewhere he feels comfortable. So it is Sam Burns, and I didn't take the market best price, but I got him at 80 to 1 on Paddy Power, 8 places. So
I might have to include him.
Yeah, we saw last week with Kuchar, you know, he wasn't supposed to go down to the tournament. He goes down there, he doesn't have his regular caddy, he's there for a holiday, and all of a sudden something clicks, bang, and he wins. So, you know, Sam Burns has a couple of missed cuts. Obviously not going to be feeling great about a couple of missed cuts, but, you know, maybe spend Saturday and Sunday just chilling out down there in Mexico, recharge the batteries, and he's going back to a place where he feels super comfortable, and hopefully finishes the season with some fireworks for us.
Yeah, 9th in that SEC individual last year, and also he's finished 8th at the Jones Cup on the track next door as an amateur. So he clearly loves the area. I'll tell you one thing I put in my preview, and this is worthy of note to punters out there. If you look at three winners of this, Slocum, Kirk and Kisner resided in the home state of Georgia, but none of them lived on Sea Island or St. Simon's Island. Because what I read about this, you know, they all go and play a bit of baseball, a bit of softball, don't they, a lot of them, all the locals, and there's talk on a Tuesday night, they all go to a local bar and have a few sherbets. I'm not so sure that the actual St. Simon Island or Sea Island residents take it as seriously as probably they should. You know, the Davis Love the Third crew, who clearly organised the tournament. But so you've got three there from Georgia. Then you've got Ben Crane from Texas. Tommy Two Gloves Gainey was from South Carolina. Mackenzie Hughes lived in North Carolina. And Austin Cook was an Arkansas lad last year. Now, I know for a fact that your man Sam Burns is also another Arkansas. I think he's Louisiana, actually. So that he fits a treat, that southern state kind of player. I think he slips between the cracks a lot because he's so inconsistent and he doesn't appear on people's stats spreadsheets. But yes, third at the Sanderson Farms. He was also... he won on the web.com at the Savannah Golf Championship. Now, Savannah is just up the coast, the Georgia coast. Yeah, it's just shouting back me, isn't it? Absolutely shouting back.
The only thing that's putting you off is the miscuts, but... You know, as Barry was saying, it's pushed his price out.
Players win off miscuts, don't they? And I took heart from Austin Cook's interviews during the tournament. Like, you know, going, oh yeah, he said, well, I've already had a top 10 on the PGA Tour, and he did that before he actually graduated to the web.com. And you know, you can see Sam Burns saying it's saying exactly the same thing. Well, I finished 8th at the Honda Classic when I actually played really well when I used to play. I played with Tiger Woods. I then went the week after to the Valspar where I finished 12th. You know, I can mix it at PGA Tour level. So third at the Sanderson, I can kind of see him coming into the mix.
Quite possibly.
Enough in the price to make it fun anyway. Nothing's really jumped off the page else as of right now. But I haven't been able to...
Oh, I thought you'd be all over my second pick.
Well, tell me who my wallet's opening for then.
Kramer Hickok.
Oh, again. I was on him a couple of weeks ago. Are we sure about this guy? Because he's gone miscut when I backed him on the Sanderson. 23rd, 29th. How does he do in the cold weather?
Find out on
Texas,
Thursday.
Mate.
Yeah.
He's from Texas. He'll fly in the cold weather. He'll fly in it, mate.
He'll be wearing a parka and like an Eskimo hat in that, and 15 degrees Celsius.
If you look at him last week, because you actually messaged me and said that. Kramer Hickok, here he comes. Yeah, he finished first, didn't he, in round one. 64, 7-under, tied with Dominic Bozzelli and Matt Kuchar at Mayakoba. He also started at the Shriners Open in Las Vegas with a opening 66, 5-under, which was fifth best tied in field. There's little bits of form with him that suggest that he can go well. The other thing, he feels a little bit like Austin Cook to me, because... Austin Cook, when I look back, he was top 20 in my role in statistics, both for driving accuracy and greens in regulation. He also had a bit of a scrambling game. And Hickok, he ticks all of those boxes. Can scramble well, keeps the bogeys under control, and clearly he's showing a lot in recent tournaments. I just thought 100-1. Texas University of Texas grad. I just think that's potentially the kind of player, if we're going along this web.com graduate route, I think him and Burns stand out at those prices. Stand out. Any from you, Paul? Are you going to say Paddy Harrington or can't trust his putting?
I'm sat here staring at Patrick Harrington. I think I'll back Harrington first round later, actually. The strength of what you've said in terms of it being colder, windier, northern Europe conditions on Thursday and Friday. And Harrington has been starting events really well. It's been when he's getting to the business end that his putt has started to really tighten up and he's missing the short putts. But the first round, he has been playing well. So he's 90-1 outright there or thereabouts. So I expect we'll probably get 66, maybe a little bit of 80 when they all build the first round leader markets. So I'll have a look at the his draw and also the price, but that may well be a punt. The one I have...
Can I stop you? Let me just stop you here. Round four last year, blew a hoolie. You listen to these names. 65s, so best on the day. Brian Harman, I know he's a wind expert. 66s, JJ Spawn, Ben Silverman, Bud Cooley, William McGirt, Lindheim, Ben Martin, and one Padre Harrington. Shot a 66 in the worst of the conditions 12 months ago. That first round leader punt sounds a good one.
Could be a game, couldn't it? The one I've backed is Patton Keziah, who's another one of the local lads. Now, his actual course form doesn't look that great, but then if you dig into it, he was 12th going into the weekend last year. He missed the cut in 2016, but he shot 73 and 65 in the second round. Still missed the cut, but clearly showed a bit of form. He was defending last week, but shot 65-66, so he was sitting third going into the weekend, so he was right in position at that point. And I had a flick through his history, and this time of year, this kind of October-November time, seems to be year after year when he comes alive and produces some decent finishes, you know, at least one top 10, potentially the win as he did last year. He's putting well. I thought 100 to 1 for someone who's shown a bit of form recently, likes the time of year, and clearly knows the course very, very well. Could be a could be one worth taking on. So 100 to 1 is, that's the one bet I've had on the RSM today.
I'm toying with a couple. The one I do really like the look of is Ryan Armour. Tee to green guy, isn't he? And he keeps showing recently, just, decent. Did well at the CJ Cup down in Korea, which was a golf course that was like 7,600 yards, something silly. Not his bag at all. He's very neat and tidy, Ryan Armour. 80 to 1. It's not the biggest of prices that you'd like, but I think that's a fair price. Any liking for Bill Haas? 66 to 1 I'm seeing him at.
I wouldn't back him with your money, Steve.
You don't like Bill?
I love Bill, but I just don't love having bets on Bill. It just too many times over the years you think, this is the week, here we go, and you lump on, and he goes and flounders around like a fish out of water. It's so frustrating because he's so goddamn talented, he seems like a lovely chap as well, so it's like winning all round, except on the place where you really want him to do it, which is the golf course, when your money's on him. So, what about our friend Stefan Jaeger?
Yeah, top 20 last week, didn't he, in the end?
He's playing. Paul and I keep discussing him. He's playing. He is becoming a lot more accustomed to the PGA Tour.
That's two top 20s in the last three events.
Yep. But when we're talking like quite high winds, cold conditions, that doesn't feel Stefan Jaeger-like to me. I expect he goes well on the weekend, but if you're starting the weekend in 60th place, you've scraped through the cut.
That's not going to help.
Win it, are you?
No, it's going to be tough to win
That's my doubt. The other one that's, I shouldn't go anywhere near because the trends and whatever suggest he won't go very well. But his price is too big for the kind of player we're talking about. Is Kevin Kisner. Yeah, he's 33 to 1 in this field. He was second at the British. He was second at the Open Championship, for God's sake.
Yeah, I see he's been backed in a bit since the markets have come up, and they've not been up for long, have they? So there's a few shrewdies sitting there waiting for his price, I think.
He's done absolutely nothing recently. I mean, he played at the Mayakoba, 71-70, missed the cut. BMW Championship in the playoffs, 58th. Boston, 24th. Not a lot there. But, this is his home course. He's won here, and he was in the top... Where was he last year? He was fourth here last year. Now, bearing in mind, before he finished fourth here last year, he'd actually finished third at the Tour Championship on his previous outing. So I know that's like a six-week gap, but he had played well at the Tour Championship. But it just seems a big price, doesn't it, on someone that clearly loves the format, the course and the tournament, 33-1?
Do you know what would be a nice win to see? I probably won't back it because of what actually happened to him a couple of weeks ago. Lucas Glover. It's just, it's awful that his price is only 33-1. But he had that kind of, let's call it a meltdown. On Sunday, and that when that the putter seemed to turn into a jelly snake in his hands.
Not the first time. He went into kind of Luke. He went into Lucas Glover mode, didn't he?
Yeah, it was brutal to see, but it's just the kind of bounce back thing that could happen, and it would be good to see it happen as well, because that would kind of get rid of a lot of the demons that are probably keeping him awake at night at the moment.
Mm. Yeah, not for me, I'm afraid.
No, me neither, but you know, if I'm not going to win with any of my bets, then that'll be my feel-good story of the week.
I struggle with a lot of these players, because it isn't the best field. I just struggle with players that, can they really go back-to-back top fives, top seven each-way places? I tell you, one player that also snuck out last week, and this could be interesting, been very, very quiet, very, very quiet. Not, you know, and this kind of goes with him. But all of a sudden, last round, yet last night, Scott Piercy shot a 62, and this chap shot a 64, second best in the field. And we know that he's a fantastic whim player. And when he actually finds the putter, he really does fit the bill. Jason Duffner?
Yeah.
100 to 1 I'm seeing about Duffbag. He was... where did he finish last week? 21st in the end he finished. Back foot, yeah, backdoor 21st, but does that matter? But yeah, 100 to 1.
Yeah, second round wasn't too shabby.
And we know that he's a fantastic win player, isn't he, Duffbag?
66 in round 2 as well. So there's something... It's not too bad, is it?
He's only played this tournament once, yeah? Finished ninth.
Mm-hmm. And he's well capable. We know how capable he is. You know, major champion. Mm.
As per usual with Duffbag, he's been hitting tons and tons of greens and has been putting like Ray Charles. Just listen to this. 11th for greens in regulation in Malaysia. Second for greens in regulation at the CJ Cup. And then 17th last week for greens in regulation. I won't read you out the putting numbers because you just know they're going to be shocking. But all of a sudden, the last two rounds of down in Mexico, he's making putts.
There may have been some minor tweak then with his setup or something that's suddenly.
Maybe someone walked up to him and said, do you think, Jason, you might spend more than 10 minutes on the old putting green?
try hitting it out of the middle of the club, Jason.
But don't you think that's a big price, 100 to 1? Mm.
Yeah, it is big.
It's pretty juicy. I would feel so wobbly with my money on him, though. You know, unless he's got a 16-shot lead going into Sunday. Yeah, just the
thing is, though, he won the Memorial last year, and this guy can win golf tournaments, can't he?
I mean, you
wouldn't be sitting there on the sofa comfortable, would you? That he was going to win,
you wouldn't at all. But when he's locked in with the putter,
100 to 1,
yeah. If he can get that putter feel going for the week, he'll just it'd be very hard to beat, because you know he's going to hit a whole bunch of greens, so. 100 to 1's as fun a 100 to 1 as you're going to find, really.
An Alabama lad, lives in Alabama, went to Alabama University, so he's got experience of this area. He fits the bill geographically. I just thought that was a decent price. I'm just quickly before, I know we've got to get on with this, but I'm just bringing up what he did with the putter last week. Yeah, here you go, typical. Round 1, 1.8 putts per GIR. Then he went 1.6 in round 2, 1.75 in round 3, and then Sunday, 1.46 putts per GIR on that Sunday. He made 10 birdies and 3 bogeys.
Jump on him, Steve. 100 to 1.
He shouldn't have left Mexico by the sounds of it.
Mm. I think I might have to have a bit of Jason Duffner. He's the kind of... Maybe I'm overreacting to Matt Kuchar and Lee Westwood, but he's the kind of guy that's won, four or five PGA Tour titles? And this is a weak field this week, and he's clearly found something.
Yeah. I like that. I like a few of those, Steve, which is pretty bad news, really.
I know. A bit like Sung Jae Im, yeah?
Yeah, something like that.
He was going all right until he shot... 2 over when everyone else was shooting 62 on the Friday. Well, I don't
know what happened. You're not exactly climbing the leaderboard like that, are you?
I think that's us then. I think that's us. Can I just thank you two for your input this year on the podcast?
And yourself,
it's been a pleasure.
Been a pleasure. Lots of fun.
One thing I should have mentioned at the top, but I'm going to have to mention it just before we actually, you know, Mike Miller on Twitter, very well respected commentator and statistical provider on Twitter. We actually won the Mike Award for 2018 for best golf betting podcast. And we shared that with Tour Junkies over in the US, who have been doing it for a long, long time. So I think that's something that, well, thanks to Mike for that, clearly. But, you know, clearly some people listen to this and take heed. I know it sounds crazy.
It's the best bribing of a jury we've ever done, lads.
No,
we'll have to think about how we make it better in 2018.
Maybe pick some winners.
Sorry, 2019. That'd make a change.
Yeah, we've got a few weeks to contemplate how we attack it for next year, but it's nice to get some positive feedback. So thanks to Mike, and nice to get that feedback, definitely.
Have a wonderful festive period, chaps.
Yeah, you too.
And to all of our listeners, thanks for your support this year. We will be back for the Century Tournament of Champions in the first week of January. Until then, enjoy your golf betting. We'll see you again very, very soon. Good night.